My name is Isaac Leung, and I'm from Hong Kong, and I'm an artist and a curator, and I was majoring in video and new media arts at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and I'm currently a research student at the Ling Nan University of Hong Kong in the Cultural Study Department. And I have been always interested in sex and technology. This is my last project, The Impossibility of Having Sex with 500 Men in a Month. I'm an Oriental Whore. It was a project that I did aim to explore whether the internet space is private or public, and if the virtual internet sex virtual or real, by attempting to have webcam sex with 500 men during that month. You guys could check out my past project in this website, and which we can talk about it more if you're interested in this project. The project that I'm working on right now is called Queering Sex Machines, the Rearticulation of Non-Normative Sexualities and Contemporary Technosexual Practices. This is a project examining the articulation and formation of sex machines as a cultural text and artifact. It will morph and reshape puzzling questions arising from non-normative sexualities and technosexual practices, aiming at investigating the cultural impacts of sex machines by studying how those machines are being identified, represented, produced, consumed and regulated in the Euro-American subcultural sexual context. Through a queer reading of those sex machines, the project will explore these questions, such as how do sex machines reconfigure the way we understand our new body and technology during the pursuit of pleasure and desire? Do technological inventions in sex machines reconfigure our body to a more alternative and non-heterosexual control and ideology? How do new bodies created by the sex machines communities being interpreted or intercepted by the marginalized queer bodies, and in what aspect that meaning and doing of sex machines signify queerness? And how do subcultural technological inventions in sex machines serve as a tool for the queer community to discursively practice on non-normative sex? Today I'm going to focus on the representation of sex machines in science fiction films from 60 to the present. And the topic of today is pleasure and discipline, the cultural representations of sex machines in the modern West. In order to trace the cultural representations of sex machines, I would divide my presentation into two parts. Part one, I would give you guys the background of sex machines, including the definition of sex machines and the types of sex machines and the cultural meanings. And in part two, I would talk about the cultural representations of sex machines in science fiction films from the 60s to the present. Right now, I'm going to go to part one, the background. There's no officially accepted definition of sex machines, and each attempt to create such relied heavily on the period of machines production. Some define sex machines as sex toys, while others focus on robotic experiments. Sex machines are often associated with fucking machines in recent years. Fucking machines are electrically operated devices with phallic attachments that imitate and respond to human body movements and are intended for performing penetrative sex. In order to talk about the cultural representation of sex machines, I'm going to use a broad definition of sex machines in my research. And the definition is objects with mechanical nature that have the capability to interface with human body. So there are those machines that designed or intended for one, bodily sexual pleasure, two, medical sexual enhancement, and three, medical sexual discipline. So these sex machines are more than just sexual pleasure machines in my definition. Right now I'm going to talk about the different types of sex machines that are recorded in the U.S. Patent Office since 1840. Among the sex machines recorded in the patent office, I divided them into six types. And in order to research on a cultural representation of sex machines, we also need to find the cultural meanings of all these machines produced in the Western history. The first type of machine I'm going to talk about is the contraceptive devices and pessaries. You see on the left-hand side is a syringe as an all-purpose abortion tool, and on the right-hand side is the electric pessary devices. Pregnancy was one of the greatest issues that women faced during the 19th century. Limited medical knowledge and social restrictions made men and women cautious of sexual intercourse that could have resulted to pregnancy. Vaginal medical devices such as pessaries were invented in order to prevent pregnancy or to cure vaginal diseases. On the other hand, social restriction on premarital sex also made Victorian women afraid of getting pregnant. Family values and religious belief made marriage and procreative intercourse legitimate. It was a fundamental belief that there should be discipline and control in sensual activities by the time. Abortion was a taboo, and being criminalized, professional control of fertility was widely recorded during the 19th century. Anti-sensualism was the dominant ideology of the Victorian private sexual behavior and public attitudes. Therefore, different kinds of contraceptive devices and pessaries were made for contraceptive and abortion purposes. The second type of machines that I'm going to go through is the chastity devices. There's a general association of chastity devices made for women, and during the Victorian period, many chastity devices were made for men to prevent the ejaculation of semen. You see a very interesting diagram here, which is a clock-like triggering chastity device. Another diagram here is the erection detective device with water and air cooling system, which was made to wake up the people, the guys, the men, with a nocturnal emission or erection. While human sexual life has always been a struggle between pleasure and restraints, science played an important role in differentiating the normal from the abnormal. Masturbation was regarded harmful to human body during the 19th century. Many doctors thought masturbation was the main cause of the mental illness for men during the period. Therefore, a lot of chastity devices were intended to prevent the ejaculation of semen. Non-procreative sex was a taboo, as mentioned above. Masturbation brought people guilt, shame, anxiety in social, religious, economic, and medical context. I'm going to talk about the third type of sex machines, which are erectile rings and penis pumps. You see on the left-hand side here is the penis pressure pumps, and on the right-hand side is an electrical penis pump with hydraulic system. The ideal of manhood and masculinity were constructed based on sexual potency throughout the Western history. Impotence was widely accepted as a consequence of masturbation during the Victorian period, and different kinds of devices were made to cure impotence or to imitate the performance of a penis. By the time, the ability of men to marry and procreate was projected as a form of patriarchal power. If the spermatic economy reflected the economic ideology of the Victorian, the impotency represented a lack of productivity. On the other hand, in the medical field, medical doctors thought women who were being either too pure or too eager in bed were a major reason for manly impotence. During the 20th century, the Freudian complex perpetuated the idea that women were a bad influence. Freud also labeled the homosexuals as a form of impotence and sexual failure. Even up to the 70s, public sex manuals published by the scholars and doctors reflected the sexist point of views regarding male impotency. Obviously, pathological distinction of sexual behaviors were rooted from the heterosexual procreation norms. While medicine became the discipline to define the abnormal, the word impotence, a form of sexual dysfunction defined as such by medical professionals, created anxiety for men and women. Right now, I'm going to show you guys another type of machines, and that they are mechanical stimulators, vibrator and male stimulators. You see, the diagram here is a battery-powered vaginal vibrator, and another diagram here is a battery-powered penile vibrating devices, which look like a toothbrush. Massive inventions of mechanical stimulators began in the 20th century. It was the time when changes of sexual attitudes and behaviors occurred under the sexual revolution. With urbanization and industrialization in different European and American societies, marital fertility rates dropped almost 50% as compared with the beginning of the 19th century. The idea of sexuality and reproduction were being increasingly separated from each during that century. The demand for pornography and sexually explicit material increased drastically, since masturbation was not considered to be the mental disease anymore. The period of sexual revolution reinforced the idea of sexual autonomy. The acceptance of non-procreational sensual activities proliferated the inventions of numerous mechanical stimulators. Here we go. The last type of sex machines I'm going to talk about are safe sex inventions and new forms of condoms and sex robots. You see on the left-hand side here is a condom zipper, and on the right-hand side, I'm sure all of you guys are very familiar with, are the fucking machines and sex robots. Safe sex devices were invented to allow humans to engage in sex without the skin contact and any bodily fluid exchange. Electrically conductive condoms and flavor dispensing condoms were aimed to increase sexual sensation during the safe sex activities. Sex robots and fucking machines took the role of real sex partners. The age of AIDS awareness is a time when sexual revolution shifts to a technological revolution. Right now, I'm going to go to part two, the cultural representations of sex machines in science fiction films from the 1960s to the present. I divided the cultural representations of sex machines in science fiction films into five different phenomena. The first one is dystopian world, social condition constructed by governmental system and scientific advancement. Two is the reproduction of new offspring in the future world. Three is sex machines and male potency, representation of gender inequality in sci-fi. Four is sexual revolution and sexual reformation in the future world. And five, sex machines imagined in the post-AIDS context. Sex machines depicted in science fiction films often portrays a dystopian world where cultural conditions are constructed by governmental systems and problematic scientific advancement. Even though the popular association of civilization to science, medicine, and technology is one of the social progress and personal healthiness, many science fiction films have represented the technological future negatively. I'm going to talk about THX 1138, directed by George Lucas in 1971, which I'm not going to show you guys the video because yesterday Nathan and Chris pretty much show all the video clips that I wanted to show. You see the picture on the top is the mechanical masturbator. The protagonist, THX 1138's sexual desire, is satisfied by a mechanical masturbator and a senseless holographic programs. And picture on the bottom is all the citizens in a totalitarian nation are required to take these prescribed sedatives. These medicines control citizens' emotions and sexual desire. And you see the picture on the left here is the protagonist THX 1138's roommate, LUH, changes the sedative to stimulants. And they begin to experience authentic emotions and happiness. They fall in love and have sex with bodily contact. Eventually, they're charged and arrested by the government for drug evasion, malicious sexual perversion, and transgression. The other film that I would like to talk about is Woody Allen's Sleeper in 1973. Just like THX 1138, the police state dictates everything from food to sexual activities. Miles, the protagonist, is arrested and brainwashed by the robot cops and scientists due to his illegal citizenship and pre-dystopian intellectual spirit. Since everyone in this country is programmed to be either frigid or impotent, an elevator-like electromechanical device called orgasmatron was being used to induce orgasm. Orgasmatron can accommodate multiple partners, immediately giving the user sexual orgasms without the need of bodily contact. I would like to say here is both films, they portray the future world as a totalitarian state where sex and bodily contact are outlawed. The image of the futuristic society that regulates sex in THX 1138 and Sleeper represents a culture of governed sexuality in the real world. Throughout the Western history, there are many different kinds of systems and regulations set up to monitor, such as pregnancy, abortion, child abuse, extramarital sex, homosexuality, and pornography. The way that citizens in the Western societies are sometimes judged and surveyed by sexual activities is not much different from the police states they are portrayed in both films. Modern technological advancement brought not only sophisticated governmental systems to the Western society, but also medical and scientific advancement that further played an important role in defining sexuality. Throughout the history, humans have sought ways to make the life easier through automation technologies. THX 1138 and Sleeper exhibit an unease towards fully automated sex, enacted without contact to the body of another human. The ironical imagination of both films represents a culture where sexuality becomes a scientific and or medical pursuit. The second phenomenon I'm going to talk about is new reproduction of new offspring in the future world. I'm going to talk about My Robot Baby, which was made by Greg Park in 2003. It portrays a married couple, you see in the picture. Marcia and her husband wants to adopt a child. And before they could adopt this robot child, they have to go through a parental trial run. As you can see on the picture on the right-hand side, Marcia and her husband, they're feeding the robot with a battery. And no matter how much Marcia wants to pass the parental trial run, she can't accept the fact that the baby is a machine. She has a lot of hard time with the baby, and then she brings the robot baby to his scientist father. She wants to change the programming of the baby so that the baby will feel like it is being loved by a mother. The baby rejects the programming eventually, and Marcia is proved to be failed as a mother. It's a very interesting scenario here. On the left-hand side is Marcia when she was a kid at the beginning of the film. And on the right-hand side is the robot baby. They both hide in the closet, which on the left-hand side is when Marcia was suffering from the failure of her parents' marriage. It was a time when her mother told her never fall in love, never get married, and never have kids. On the right-hand side is the robot baby hiding from Marcia when he was not being satisfied. Both scenes bring the relationship of the baby and parents. It raises an interesting question of whether a robot baby is a real human or not. The other film I want to talk about is Artificial Intelligence AI, directed by Steven Spielberg. David here is a robot child, also known as Maker. He's a robotic boy with biological appearance with the capability to love and dream. The film talks about Henry Swindon and his wife Monica have decided to adopt David since the son Martin has been cryogenically frozen due to chronic illness. As David continues to live with the Swindons, he starts to feel love for Monica due to his activated imprinting protocol. But things go wrong when the biological son Martin is miraculously cured, leading to an android son David being abandoned. I want to emphasize here, first of all, in My Robot Baby and Artificial Intelligence AI, marriage system play an important role in the procreation process. Marcia, in My Robot Baby, is suffering from her parents' failure marriage. Her attitude towards the robot baby is highly influenced by the childhood trauma. In Artificial Intelligence AI, Mecca is created only for the licensed married couple that they are lonely and childless in a world where human reproduction is prohibited. The film again reinforces the legitimacy of the marriage system since non-married people are not allowed to have babies. On the other hand, both films raise the very philosophical question about whether a human can love a mechanical baby. In a future world, even a robot with a humanoid body and emotions, people still question the existence of the robot. The question of whether a humanoid robot is human echoes the fundamental questions in the abortion debates in many Western societies. According to the pro-life groups, fetuses and embryos are human beings, and therefore they have the right to live. But on the other hand, pro-choice groups are emphasizing on the reproductive rights that women have the right to choose whether or not to continue a pregnancy. Marcia fails to be a mother because she doesn't believe that the robot baby is real. David in AI is abandoned by Monica, so he goes on a quest to find the real him in order to make his mother return his love. In both films, the way Marcia and Monica question whether the robot child is real or not represents the attitude towards abortion of many Western societies that many people question whether the fetuses are actually whether they're real human being. The possibility of biological manipulation to create a perfect offspring in recent years provoked directors such as Park and Spielberg to imagine a future world of new reproduction culture. I'm going to talk about the third phenomenon here. Here we go, Flash Gordon 2. Flash Gordon meets the Cosmic Cheerleaders, made in 1989. As we can see from this poster, it's a very male heroic figure with a big crotch. And on the left-hand side is a sexy woman standing next to this male hero protagonist. It talks about an evil from an outer planet, evil presence, created this impotence machine and threatened the universe by making all the men in the universe impotent, since he's not able to satisfy his wife sexually. You see, on the picture on the left-hand side is evil presence holding this like impotence machine, and on the right-hand side is this like, you know, impotence ray attacking the Earth. The whole film focuses a lot on male genitals. As you see on the left-hand side is like, you know, the men in Ice Planet, they all have huge cock. They also use the cock to play basketballs. The film talks about one day when evil presence used this impotence ray to make all the men in the Ice Planet limp. As you can see on the right-hand side of the picture is like, you know, the cock goes limp. Therefore, their cosmic cheerleaders kidnap Flash Gordon, since he's the most potent man in the universe. You can see on the right-hand side, he's very potent. Again, we see the film is very much emphasizing on male's potency here. Other than the ridiculous big male genitals, I also want to talk about Dr. Flexi Jerkoff. Throughout the whole film, he plays, touches, and even enlarges women's breasts. In the Karova milk bar scene, Dr. Flexi Jerkoff dresses up like a baby and drinking milk from a woman on the right-hand side. Flash Gordon 2 is a perfect example of science fiction films that represent male anxieties of impotence. The idea of being potent also represents masculinity situated in a culture of gender inequality. If evil presence is a symbol of impotence, Flash Gordon is the classic heroic figure that symbolizes potency and masculinity. As in many other films produced in Hollywood, the female is always projected as a victim to be rescued by the male hero protagonist. Not only that, homosexuals are also projected as monsters in this film. You see, on the right-hand side is this gay monster. Homosexuals are projected as monsters in this film when Flash Gordon and Dr. Flexi Chekhov crash in this field of grassy breasts. A phallic gay alien appears to attack the two heroes, while the two heterosexual men are forced to bend over in a highly stereotypical sex joke. This film well represents the homophobic culture, reinforcing the Freudian complex that labels homosexual as a form of impotence and sexual failure. The fourth phenomenon I'm going to talk about is sexual revolution and sexual reformation in the future world. You see, a very interesting two poster here is, I'm sure, like, we have talked about Barbarella a lot in this Ars Electronica pretty much every day. And on the right-hand side is Iku. They're both, they're produced, like, you know, one is in 1968 and the other one is in 2001. Both women, the protagonists, they're holding this, you know, phallic machine gun. Here we go, Barbarella. Unlike Flash Gordon, the heroic figure here is a female. The film talks about how Barbarella saved the world by stopping the nuclear war. And the film shows how Barbarella enjoys sex with different people throughout her journey. First of all, an ultra-hairy man and Barbarella have sex in an old-fashioned way. And then they go to Barbarella and Giordano have sex with sex pills, which you guys saw the little clip from yesterday. And then Barbarella, an excessive machine. Barbarella was made at the height of the 60s when sexual revolutions proposed the idea of sexual autonomy. The film shows a tolerance of different sexual behaviors, celebrating the art of sexual pleasure that elicits unlimited fantasies. The image of future sex in Barbarella exhibits sexual diversity, embracing the idea of sexual freedom and sexual activities that are rooted in the sexual revolution. Iku, on the other hand, made by Shuli Chang, who was born in Taiwan and currently lives in Paris, is another film that represents sexual diversity by portraying the reformation of future sex. Directed by Shuli Chang, Iku is an experimental pornographic film that portrays a new form of sex that has been invented by the futuristic corporation. You see on the right-hand side is the Iku chips sold in vending machines, which all these, like, orgasms are stored in these chips so that people in the future world could buy orgasm anytime from the vending machines. The film talks about Iku Coder and Iku Runner. Iku Coder is the sex robot made to collect orgasm data by having sex with different people. Iku Runner is a transgender from the male to female, which on the right hand side here. He is assigned to collect orgasm data by using a dildo gun. Shuli Chang's imagination of future sex is situated in the moment when the sexual revolution engages with technological revolution. Chang has described Iku in an interview that Iku as a visual metaphor for the sexual freedom afforded by the internet. She wanted to portray a world where people can indulge in fantasy with others regardless of gender, social constraints, or even physical possibilities. Heterosexual, polysexual, bisexual people, male, female, transgender people, and people with different ethnicity are being portrayed in this film. Chang represents the different codes of sexual behaviors in Iku. She portrays and celebrates a world of sexual reformation in the future that is inspired by a culture of sexual diversity in the contemporary Western society. Lastly, I want to talk about sex machines imagined in the AIDS dystopia. Here we go, Demolition Man, made in 1993 by Marco Brambilla. In the future city, as you saw it yesterday in Chris' presentation, in that future city, people wear a new kind of sex machines on the head during the verse sex to replace physical intercourse. Everyone fears contracting an STD virus. When John, the protagonist, on the left asks Huxley on the right to have a penetrative sex, Huxley says, after AIDS, there were NRS and there was UBT. Huxley is disgusted by Sparsman's request on sex with bodily contact that is considered to be super dangerous in the future world. Demolition Man is a good example of sexual culture in the AIDS era. The name Versex is inspired by virtual sex. Protective actions in response to AIDS, NRS, or UBT in this film are a reflection of how people deal with body fluid exchange starting in the 80s. Besides the science fiction films that are directly dealing with the issues of STDs, there are many science fiction films represent sex workers' subjectivity and postmodern bodies. Here we go Blade Runner, Ghost in the Shell 2, and Artificial Intelligence AI. Sex robots in these films are projected as sex worker, such as in Blade Runner, I'm sure you guys are very familiar with. And sex dolls in Ghost in the Shell 2 are inspired by Daedalus Handbellus doll. And they're also projected as sex worker in Ghost in the Shell 2. In AI, Gigolo Joe is a male prostitute. Even though all these sex machines are projected as different forms in these three films, they all have the same destiny. They're being marginalized by the people with power. During the Western history, sex workers are often stigmatized and marginalized on the ground of high moral and cultural standards based on traditional family values, marriage system, and procreative sex. Sex robots are projected as harmful and dangerous to the future world in these films, represents the social view towards sex workers in many Western societies. Slave robots in this hybrid, globalized, overpopulated, and chaotic noir cities illustrated in Blade Runner, Ghost in the Shell 2, and AI are the perfect artifacts of the identity of sex workers in this highly developed, globalized real world. I want to bring up the representation of postmodern body here. In Cyborg Manifesto, Donna Haraway positions Cyborg as a hybrid being, and she criticizes the essentialism of female body and gender identity. Cyborg theory subverts the essential idea of naturalism and artificialism by following the logic that the lines between organism and machine have been blurred. The hybrid form of organism and machine reinforces the postmodernity of everyday life. Cybersex, mechanical sex toys, fucking machines, and sex robots reflect the constantly changing meaning of sexual identities, relationship, or even community. The postmodern body is no longer framed by singular identity, but a complex, fragmented political self. The eroticization of postmodern bodies in these three films above well represents the reformation of sexual culture of our time. After talking about different aspects of sex machines representations in science fiction films, I want to do a little conclusion here. First of all, I want to divide the sex machines into two types in these films, the mechanical and the humanoid types. Secondly, I want to divide the science fiction films above into two different textual and narrative divisions, the technological dystopia and AIDS dystopia. Before the emergence of AIDS, none of the above the science fiction films depict sex machines as in humanoid forms. The science fiction films produced in the 60s and 70s were situated in the sexual revolution. It was a time when the free love hippie movement proposed new codes of sexual behavior, sexual autonomy, and gender equality. Moreover, advancement in science, technology, medicine, and healthcare, juridical system, and governmental systems brought sexuality into a public discourse. The image of sex machines before the emergence of AIDS fully represented double standard and contradictions of sexual culture in the Western society during the 60s and 70s. It represents the technological dystopic imagination in the future world. In the post-AIDS productions, a lot of the science fiction films portray sex machines in humanoid forms. And they always portray a world of AIDS dystopia where the line between human body and machines became blurred. Fear of bodily contact, body fluid exchange, and new identities of body became the core themes of science fiction films produced in this AIDS era. The sex machines in the science fiction films above are shown in many different forms. They might be shown in mechanical and humanoid forms. They could be used to facilitate and oppress sexual pressure. They could be the center of power and or represent the powerless. The complex and contradictory sexual culture in the modern West reminds us of Foucault's repressive hypothesis and the governmentality of sex. The different representations of sex machines in science fiction films above shows the repressive and anti-repressive interest in sex. They represent both pleasure and discipline of sexuality. Multiplicity of forces relations in sexuality not only proliferated thousands of sex machines inventions, they are also represented in sex machine depictions in these science fiction films. Different sexual cultures we see above, no matter they are the social condition constructed by the governmental system and economy, or the technologies of sex that is framed by scientific and medical advancement, they all create a complex and yet contradictory discourse of sex. The concept of governmentality develops a new understanding of power. Foucault encourages us to think about power not only in terms of hierarchical, top-down power of the state. He widens our understanding of power to also include the forms of social control in disciplinary institutions, such as schools, hospitals, psychiatric institutions, etc., as well as the form of knowledge. Power can manifest itself positively by producing sex machines as a means of pleasure, but at the same time, it creates fears towards sex machines as a tool for discipline. No matter what, where, and when the sex machines turn up in the cinematic imagination, and no matter whether it's portrayed as a tool for pleasure or discipline, they closely represent a complex and constantly changing and contradictory culture of sexuality in the modern West. Here is the end of my presentation. And also I would like to end up show you guys the trailer of Iku, because apparently this is the only film that hasn't been came across in this festival.
Okay.
I'm going to show a little bit of this.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
It's just
and
a very
we'll do
short
the thing. Questions afterwards. Excellent.
Now connecting. initiation successful. IKU system up.
Okay, Q&A, I guess. No, not a single question. Really? Really?
What?
They're mesmerized. I think you stunned them. They're completely, they are not able to talk.
So. Okay.
Okay. It's a cultural clash, you know, with the Americans.
Too academic, or
okay.
You were talking about how in the Victorian era, impotence was seen as like a. You were talking about how in the Victorian era, impotence was seen as like a negative force. It was a bad thing, like the maybe like, you know, it was and like, you know, Freud thought that it was a part of gayness and like and all this other shit. Do you think that? It seems to me like that's been extended in technologies like Viagra and Cialis and whatever all the other impotence drugs. I mean, to me, that seems like just the logical extension of that technology, which hasn't really ended. And I guess I don't really know what my question is there. I just wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Right. Well, it's true. Like, I think that the main sort of purpose that my research is like, you know, to map out all these like different science fiction films that depict sex machines, and to trace back, you know, the cultural history and all these cultural meanings, which, you know, not necessarily like, you know, it's never just a single sort of like force. We often very easily to think about, you know, the Victorian period is all like repressive, the people. But they're all like, you know, tons of like journals and letters and things that are found that there are people are very progressive too. By referring to your thoughts, like, you know, it's true, you know, like the whole history of like, you know, impotency, the fear of impotency is, you know, that there are many different machines that are made, and even till now, you know, like, you know, medicine, technology, medicine is one of the things that, you know, Viagra, but there are, you know, penis pumps, and, you know, many different machines that are also made even nowadays, and the discourse of sex is still going on, like, it's never just like, you know, even though like we are in San Francisco, you know, and we are the very liberal people, but then, you know, there are different forces there, out there, you know, people like, you know, oppressing or, you know, anti-taking drugs or taking the Viagra or different things. But I guess it's like, you know, it's just that could be all traced back in its history and still evolving.
Yeah, having personally lived through those eras that you're talking about, you know, the sexual freedom era of the 1960s came as a result of a lot of confluence of bursting forth from a period of earlier repression, and which was kind of marked by the release or the invention of the contraceptive for women. But you know, there have been other sexual freedom periods that have existed. Certainly, there was kind of a release thing that occurred in the 1920s, the so-called flapper era, which was kind of like a reaction to the Great War, and so you can almost say that the present repressive era that we have now is kind of a logical extension of the sexual freedom era of the 1960s, because this is like a reaction of the forces that existed back then, except now they have a voice to come forth and be prominent.
Right.
Do you see this as a possible cultural mechanism that that is existing here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, and also, like, not just, sexual, like, revolution, like, all these, like, the rise of fundamentalists, you watch TV every day, Palin still say that, anti-abortion or anti-gay, all this stuff is still going on still, and it's like really an extension, this is why I wrap up the whole presentation by using Foucault's repressive hypothesis in this sort of like modern West, is all these kind of different forces going on that are also pretty much like rooted even from back in the Victorian period.
Okay, maybe a last question from the audience, if there is one. Well, I guess. Thanks a lot, Isaac.
Okay, all right, thank you.